Good evening.
Good evening.
We'll start in about 1 minute.
Okay.
See you in the morning. Coffee, thank you. Smart coffee, thank you. No, I think so. No, he and I have arranged to go over to Pittsburgh.
Oh, good.
But I've arranged to go and try it.
Sure. Please. Yeah, what was the thing with that
one? Rabbi.
Toby.
Last one is Wexler. What did you say? W-E-C-H. W-E-T-S-W-E-C-H. L-E-R. Wexler.
Oh, okay.
Shall we start?
Yes.
We're starting with section 7. Let the waters be gathered from the Parashat Bereshit, from the Zohar commentary. And it's with the verse, or Pasuk 66. And we'll start with the L'shem Yehud as one. L'shem Yehud kudshabarichu ishkinte bitchilu perchimud chilu le'agashim yud he vevav he v'yehuda shalim B'shem kol Yisrael limut Torah Vayomer Elokim Ki kahu chamayim v'gomer B'orach tav l'mechewe b'orach Me'shar d'ha me'raza d'ha hiyo B'kuda chadma'a Nafak kola, pistimu ad demate, feit kanish lehekala, ila'a, umitaman nafek bekav, meshar lishar, dargin ad demate, behahu atarchad, Dekanesh kola, Biklak bekala dekar, Benugva uman, Ihu chai almin. And Elohim said, let the waters be gathered. The words be gathered, the Hebrew word is yikavu, means that the mochim called the waters will travel in a straight line. The Hebrew word is akav. On one level, without spreading to the right or the left. Everything flows mysteriously from the secret of that primal point, which is Arichantin, until the light reaches and is gathered in the supernal temple. From there, referring to Israel Saba and Tevunah, it then flows in a straight line to the other grades, namely to Zerantin, until it reaches that one place where everything is gathered, according to the secret of male and female. He asked, and what is that place? He replied, this is the life of the worlds, namely Yesod of Zerampin, which is the male, who is united with Malchut, which is the feminine principle. Thus it comprises male and female together. Questions, comments, answers?
The
name of the title of the section is the waters. Let the waters be gathered.
And the
Torah starts out with the worlds of Tohu and Bohu, and then it says, "Let there be light." Day one, and then day two is the firmament separates between the upper waters and the lower waters. And then day three is the waters need to be gathered. That's where we've reached that point. So what does it mean for the waters to be gathered? Well, there's some very real studies that have indicated that it talks, the Hebrew supports that the world had one continent, and then it separated into seven. So, which is consistent with the archaeological theories going around now. But that's not what this is talking about. The easiest way to understand what this is talking about is to talk in terms of Joseph when he was in Egypt. Now, Joseph was a son of Jacob. He was sold into slavery. He was accused of improper actions in the sexual area, which is, as we've discussed a few times, the Sephirah of Yesod is both the sexual organs, but it's also the creative process. It's also creation, the energy of creation. So Joseph was in jail, deep in the hole, deep in the earth, which is where they put jails in Egypt in those days. And he interpreted Pharaoh's dream, and the next day they gave him a shower, cleaned him up, took him to Pharaoh to interpret the dream, and he is appointed number two in Egypt. The only person that he answers to is Pharaoh, and everybody else answers to him. Now, what does that really mean? And what did he do? He had prophesied by interpreting the dream that there was going to be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine, and that it was necessary to gather, let the waters be gathered, to gather all of the produce, the plenty, so it didn't go to waste. So he bought up all the produce for the land of Egypt, for the Pharaoh, for the crown, and he built storehouses, and he put all of this land, agricultural produce, in those storehouses owned by the Pharaoh. And then when the 7 years of plenty was over and the famine started, the famine was, he gave out all that he had gathered. He made sure everybody could stay alive. This is what it's talking about. In the creative process, we have black and white, good and evil, male and female, different energies. But in our world, what's the difference? Our world is a world of gray. The two different energies are together. To get married, male and female together. Good and evil lives right next door to each other. Gathering and sharing. This is the funnel, the nature of what is Yesod, the male organ, and the creation process. That's what this verse is telling us. Verse 67. Hamayim v'nafke milel meit Hashem ila'a mitachat ha-shamayim Vav ze'era v'yalda vav chad shamayim v'chad mitachat ha-shamayim kedein v'teira'e Hayabasha Da Shem Tata Da Itkele Bekosha Ar Itkase Goy Hai Batra Ishtama Tasukla Tanu Hahude Itkase. It also establishes the order. Can you share? Can you give people things if you haven't received it first? And how do you receive? You have to organize it. You have to gather it together. You have to decide how it's going to be given out. That's what you said. It's literally a big funnel that is a funnel in both directions. So everything that comes into the physical world comes through that funnel. And everything that verbally or energetically people want to speak to the Creator has to be funneled back up. So it works in both directions. The waters mentioned in the verse flow from above, from the upper He of the Yud He Vav He, which is Israel, Saba, and Tibunah. The words under the heaven allude to the small Vav, which is Yesod of Zerantin. Zerantin is called Great Vav, while the Yesod is called Small Vav. Therefore, when the letter Vav is pronounced, two Vavs are heard. The first one is heaven, namely Zerantin, and the second one is under the heaven, namely Yesod of Zerantin. After the Mochin are drawn from the upper He, which is Bina, down under heaven, which is Yesod of Zerantin, it is written, and let the dry land appear. This is the lower He, namely Malchut, the feminine principle of Zerantin, because only she was revealed as dry land, while the other grades were hidden. From within the last grade, referring to the lower He, Malchut, that light that was concealed was heard and revealed. The male organ has two components, referred to as the crown and the stem. When male and female comes together, they both disappear into the valley, using that expression, the valley of the female. When a sin is done, when a mistake is done, the stem separates from the crown. But the crown is always concealed in the vagina. This is the metaphors that the Zohar is using to help us understand the Tree of Life and the creative process, which is what the book of Genesis is describing, is using those same energetic forces and describing it in code words that the Zohar helps us understand. So in this verse, it's telling us that everything flows down into Yesod, and if it's working properly, it flows into the next, into the union of male and female, which is heaven and earth, which is Vav. The letter Vav means a hook. But the letter Vav basically is a straight line. It doesn't deviate right or left. It doesn't curve. It's straight. And when you spell the letter Vav out, when you say Vav, you're saying two V's, two Vavs. There's a large Vav, the first one, that is, whether it's revealed or concealed, that's a different discussion. But the large Vav is heaven. The small Vav is the male organ being inserted into the physical world. Without that, there's no flow of beneficence. There's no flow of goodness. That's what the verse is teaching us. Verse 68. Elhu kishura de Yehuda de Alma Ila ayud dalet vav dalet echad ushmo echad Tiren yitchudin chad de Alma Ila alit yachada Bedar goy v'chad de'alma, tata alit yachada, bedar goy kishura, de'yichuda de'alma, ila ad hakam, ihu he'almin, tamanit v'seyam, beit kashar alma, ila abiyehuda, dileya, ugin kachikre, makom echad kol dargin, v'kol shaifin, mitkan shin taman, wachawo, kal ho be'yachad bila, be'rudah kilal, v'leit dargav de'it yachadan, taman be'yehuda, chad elachay uve'ya, itkashyan kal ho, be'orach satem, betiv tachad, al haka bedarga da'it yachad, alma de'it galyayo, bi'alma de'it kasyayo. The phrase to one place is called Yesod, because there is a connection to the upper world through Yesod. The verse Hashem shall be one and his name one hints at two unions. One is the upper world that is unified in its own grades, which is the secret of Hashem is one. And the second is the lower world that is unified in its own grades, according to the secret, and his name is one. The unification of the upper world by the secret of Hashem is one is up to Yesod. The life of the worlds, which is Yesod, is sweetened in Bina, and the upper world is connected to its unification. Because of this, it is called to one place. As all the grades and all the parts, the Sefirot of the Partsuf of Zerantin, gather there, and they become as one in it, without any separation at all. No grade unites there wholly, save this grade, in which all the lights are mysteriously covered in one desire. Up to this point, referring to the words, and let the dry land appear. The revealed world, which is the secret of Rachel, is unified with the concealed world, which is Leah. Questions? No problem.
You're asking if you want to go ahead. I can check you.
If you don't, if people don't ask questions, it's hard.
I had a question. Sure. Go back to the beginning when you first started.
Sure.
Can I go back?
You,
yeah,
of course.
Okay. I forgot his name right. The son of Jacob.
Joseph.
Hey, Joseph. Okay. Going back, you said Joseph was in prison. Egypt, obviously.
Yes.
Now, he was a slave.
He was initially a slave, then he was accused of adultery, and
right.
Then he was in prison. Right.
Right, okay. Then he was sent to the Pharaoh, and he was just suggesting that they would have a plague. They meant, like, I'm sorry, 7 years.
Of plenty followed by 7 years of leanness.
Right, and that's what he told him, and because of that, what made him number two in the land.
That's correct.
Okay. How did he get that information?
The story in the Bible is that Pharaoh had a dream.
Okay.
And the dream is described in the Bible.
Okay.
And Pharaoh went to his dream interpreters, to his wise men, to his astrologers, to his magician, and said, interpret the dream. And none of them could do so.
Okay.
So one of the I believe it was the baker, no, it was the wine steward, had been in jail with Joseph, and he had interpreted his dream. And so he remembered that Joseph was a good dream interpreter. So he told Pharaoh about it, that there was a wise Hebrew slave that could help him. So they brought him to Pharaoh.
Right.
And he interpreted the dream. He described the dream, and he even told Pharaoh you're lying to me when you describe the dream because I know it's different than that. And when all was said and done, Pharaoh said, this is a very wise person,
okay,
very connected to Hashem, and we need to utilize his skills. And so he appointed him to be second in command.
Okay. Then I was wondering how he was able to get that information that he knew and nobody else could figure it out.
From his intuition,
okay,
from his connection to the Creator.
That's what I was trying to figure out.
Which is essentially, what I said to you the other day, what I teach is how to remove your chaos.
Right.
The way you do that is by learning how to strengthen and connect to the true intuition that you have within you. Because you know everything that's happening to you before it happens. Everything is known to your soul, to your unconscious. It's just not, we don't listen to it. We don't hear it. We don't trust it. Because in the Western world, you're taught logic. You're not taught intuition. But Kabbalah teaches you how to strengthen that connection to your intuition and start to listen to it so that you will know how to avoid the chaos. Now, on another level, there are, you know, do's and don'ts associated with the mitzvot. But all of that is a lower level before you strengthen your intuition. At some point, and all of the mitzvot are relative. Sometimes you're supposed to do one, sometimes you're not. Every one of them is supposed to be. There are times when you don't do what it says to do, and at other times you do what it says not to do. An example of that is you're not supposed to turn on the lights, so to speak, on Shabbat. You're not supposed to drive on Shabbat. But if somebody is ill and you have to rush them to the hospital, you're supposed to drive on Shabbat, and you didn't break the Shabbat to do that. So everything is relative. But when do you know to accept the driving, and when do you stop it? This is how you have to strengthen that intuition. And that's what the tools that I teach let you do. Almost everything you'll hear from me makes sense. But that's not why it's good for you to do. Never believe anything I'm telling you. But try and do some of the things, all of the things I suggest you do. And then after a few months, you'll say to yourself, this works for me. I may not understand why it works. It doesn't make logical sense, but it works. And that's up to you. Any other questions on this verse that we did? Because I really didn't explain this. But it's essentially the phrase, God is one and his name is one. When you understand the code word, name is vessel. God is fulfillment. In spirituality, the fulfillment and the vessel are opposites. Sharing and receiving are opposite energies. We are vessels. Yet, we have a desire for fulfillment. In the physical world, we can get that fulfillment. In the spiritual world, they're opposites. They're not even close together. But it gets, what makes it strange is that the Torah tells us that he and his name are one. That's what this verse is talking about, light and vessel. And that's what it's explaining to us. That's what it's using as a metaphor. Your name and your soul are one. Well, wait a second. Somebody named me when I got born. How do they know what my soul is? The Torah tells us that whoever names you was given a connection to the Creator to make sure that your name matches your soul. So by studying your name, you can find out all about you, which character traits you lean towards, which are positive, which are negative, all of that. Everything is ordained by the name that somebody gives you. But they would never be able to change the name that is right for you, because they're given that knowledge, and that's what they name you. Now, throughout your life, you'll get different names. Somebody's named Robert, then they become Bobby. Then later in life, Bob. And then, you know, something else. The name that is, you know, Robert Jones Jr., he has a similar tikkun, a similar correction, and similar attributes of his father, named Robert Jones Sr. All of this is part of what Kabbalah is teaching you and giving you the information to know who you are without having to have anybody around you as your mirror. By studying the name, you can find out who you are. And that's one of the things we teach.
Real life case example.
Mm-hmm.
My name was supposed to be David. At the last minute, it was Kenneth. And I researched Kenneth according to your charts. Fits perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
My ancestry, my temperament, everything. I have not gone back because I don't want to challenge the wisdom by comparing with, had I been named David?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go there.
You weren't named David.
Exactly.
So, therefore, it's not appropriate for your soul.
Right. The way I reasoned it out.
My name, my English name when I was born was Henry. When I was bar mitzvah, I was called to the Torah with a Hebrew name of Hanoch. My father always called me Gus. Why? Because that's what he and my mother nicknamed the fetus in her belly. She'd had two miscarriages, and I had two sisters and two miscarriages, and they wanted a boy. And so they named me Gus. Well, when I look at the gematria and the meaning of Gus, it has to do with Dina. It has to do with the upper worlds. Hanoch, I've explained to you, I am doing the work that I am supposed to do based on the analysis of my name. I just started to do this work before I did the analysis, but it all ties together. You know, and other people will say, no, that's not me. You know, I have a person that I taught for. Right? She was the principal. I was one of the teachers in a Hebrew school. Her name was Debbie. She was 60 years old. Debbie is a little girl.
Yes.
That's her tikkun, to grow out of being a little girl. She hasn't achieved it. So she continued to want to be called Debbie because her father called her Debbie. All of her childhood was Debbie. And she never grew up to be an adult. Sure, she was an adult in the physical world. She worked a job. She was married. She had children. But she always kept this name.
Still had the diminutive of Deborah.
Correct.
It can be as simple as that?
Yes, it can be as simple as that. And it can be very complex. Not complex. Tikkun is always simple, just not easy to do. But the tikkun itself will always be simple. Somebody stops you on the street and asks you for the time. Wouldn't you say, tell them the time? Aren't you a nice person? Oh, but what if you have a business meeting that you're late for and you don't have the time to take the phone out of your pocket? Will you still tell them the time? What's your priorities? Tikkun is simple actions. Giving somebody a glass of water. Giving somebody a meal. Telling somebody the time. giving somebody a compliment. These are simple actions. But when you are given the opportunity to do it, and you don't, you'll be given another chance with exactly that same soul. But it will be more difficult. You'll have 40 things in your hands when they ask you for the time. Will you drop the 40 things to get the phone out of your pocket? Will you ask them to put their hands on you when they're dirty and homeless and all of the rest of it? It's always simple to describe. It's just never easy to do. Any other questions? Oh, we can do one more. Verse 69. Amade it galayo it yachad ofake letata we alma tit galayo ihu alma tetata vere et hashem vayiru et eloke Yisrael ukvod Hashem nira vayera kavod Hashem kemare hakeshet vegomer kein mare hanoga saviv umare demut kevod Hashem udaidu razavate rae hayabasha. The revealed world, which is Rachel, the feminine principle of Zeranpin, who is located from his chest downward, is similarly unified below. The revealed world is the lower world, as can be proven by reading the scriptures, where it is described in the terms of seeing. I saw Hashem, and they saw the Elohim of Israel. And the glory of Hashem appeared, and literally it was seen, past tense. And as the appearance of the rainbow, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of that likeness of the glory of Hashem. And it is known that the lower feminine principle, who is called Rachel, is described by the words glory of Hashem, and by the term et. This is the secret of the verse, let the dry land appear, literally be seen, because seeing applies only to the revealed world and not to the upper world. Do you see ghosts? Do you see spirits? If you do, in this world, they lock you up. And everybody says they're crazy. They are seeing actual entities. But they're not supposed to. The reason they're seeing them has to do with their correction and their tikkun. Because in a previous life, they dealt with witchcraft and divination and all these different kinds of inappropriate seeking of God. There's nothing wrong with seeking God. We all are seeking God in one form or another. But there are ways to seek God that are kosher, and there are ways that are not. And when you seek God in a non-kosher manner, the effect is in a next incarnation or another incarnation, if you don't do teshuvah, you are seeing entities who are given permission to bother you. So what's wrong? Why do we think that taking drugs is not a good thing? It's because people take drugs to get close to God, to see God. You get drunk. Too much alcohol, too much drugs, too much LSD, whatever. What is going on there? You're seeking God. Is there something wrong with that? No. But there's a path to seeking God that is kosher and other paths that are not. That's the mistake. drinking too much, taking drugs are paths that are not kosher. And the results you see with people who all of a sudden they see pink elephants and they see entities and they hear voices and they don't know how to handle the boundaries between the spiritual levels and the physical level. And what this verse is telling us is there's a lower world, which is our physical world, and how do you know it's our physical world? From these different phrases and code words that they're quoting in the Zohar that come directly from the Tanakh, from the Bible itself. And so we know that the physical world is a lower world because it's revealed, because we have senses to see it, to touch it, to feel it, to hear it. But there's an upper world, has entities just as well, has human beings, but they're not called human beings, our higher souls. But we can't see them. We can't touch them. We can't hear them usually until we develop our intuition. I have a girlfriend, sometimes she's a girlfriend, lives in Salt Lake City, and she stands up, literally she stands up, she asks out loud a question. Is Hanoch telling me the truth? Is usually the question, because it's so different than her background and her learning. And she gets the answer. She always gets the answer, yes, he's telling you the truth. Has she ever gotten an answer that says, no, he's not telling you the truth? Yes, one time she got an answer, no, he's not telling you the truth. And when we analyzed it, it was because it wasn't true for her, but it was true for me and for others. And she understood that. So, but she has this connection. But 2 days ago we were on the phone and she says, my intuition is lying to me. Something's wrong. I don't know what's going on. I talked to her about the energy of Tammuz. I talked to her about how she was more into her own desire to receive for oneself alone. And so her intuition is always going to lie to her when she's doing that and she's not sharing. It's all part of the system. When you study Kabbalah, you learn the system. You learn how to be able to connect to your higher self. You still can't see those things, although there are people who see auras. But do they really see auras? As I said, don't believe a word I say. How do you believe somebody who says that your aura is purple or blue or green or yellow? How do you believe them? They could be lying to you, correct? But you can know internally if they're telling the truth when you strengthen your intuition. And then you don't need them to read the aura because you'll know directly, because you'll be hearing the voices. You'll be hearing the messages. Bacha, that's the class for tonight. Do you have any questions?
No, I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Good discussion. Good discussions.
We'll have I'll be speaking to you at 9 o'clock your time.
Okay.